This is Ready Radio, preparing you to be ready for anything. Now, here's your survival guide for Ready Radio, John Rush.
All right, it is Ready Radio, KLZ 560. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it very, very much. And for those of you maybe tuning in for the first time, we do this every Friday from 2 to 3 o'clock. If you're listening to a replay, it is a program that is on today, live, the 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock hour on July the 19th. And man, the year is just rolling by. Huge Microsoft outage today. If those of you are out there haven't noticed it, some of you, depending upon what you're doing, I realize it's a Friday, maybe you haven't been paying a lot of attention, but for a lot of people, this has been a major, major, major disruption to their day, to their life, depending upon where you're at and what you're trying to do. Could be traveling, could be banking, could be any number of things. There are literally thousands upon thousands of companies, probably millions if you really want to get down to it, that have been affected by the CrowdStrike update. Now, without getting super technical, CrowdStrike is a cybersecurity slash IT company. They pushed out a patch, I guess you could call it. I'm guessing in the middle of the night, that's typically when they do these things. And when they did, a lot of people came in, or it immediately caused the blue screen of death. If you have a Windows machine, you know what I mean by that. And it literally caused the blue screen of death. Servers only. So a lot of people using a workstation may not have noticed it, but when you tried to do something on any network, you would have noticed that, hey, this isn't working. I got several different email updates today from different banking institutions and so on that I am affiliated with that basically said, you know, we've got some major disruptions, blah, 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 blah. You know, you won't be able to log in. And it all has to do with this CrowdStrike problem, I guess you could call it. And this was inadvertent. They didn't do this on purpose, and it wasn't, at least to everybody's knowledge at this point, it wasn't a cybersecurity, you know, hack or anything along those lines. It was simply somebody pushing out some tech pushing out an update, quote unquote, that affected Microsoft computers. Now, it affected even some Amazon servers and things like that. So again, this is pretty widespread. What's interesting, and my son Richard and I were talking about this a little bit earlier today, a lot of the major airlines were disrupted. They run on some sort of a Microsoft platform that was affected by this. For those of you that remember Windows 3.1, Charlie, do you remember Windows 3.1 and how old? I mean, so there was Windows 3.1 and then 3.1.1. I think there was even one before 3.1. I can't remember going all the way back. Then you got into Windows 95, then 98, then 2000, and then on through where we are today. So believe it or not, and I don't know if this is true, but I saw a report today that Southwest Airlines, the reason there was no disruptions, technically speaking, with Southwest as far as their technology side is concerned, is believe it or not, they still are running on Windows 3.1. They're running that old. Now, there were disruptions at Christmas time. It was 2 years ago, I believe, Charlie, that would have been Christmas 2022, I want to say, where they had all sorts of issues, and a lot of it had to do with their routing software and so on, and there were going to be major upgrades made. Well, evidently, they haven't made those, because had they probably would have been affected by this particular outage today. So I guess it's good they maybe haven't got all their stuff updated. But it, to me, the most surprising thing is not that Southwest is running on really, really, really old software. But what's surprising is how many companies evidently use this particular IT company, CrowdStrike, to take care of their needs, or at least their cybersecurity ends of things, and how widespread this is. It's absolutely mind-boggling. What's also mind-boggling to me is the amount of companies still using Microsoft software. Yeah, I know a lot of you are thinking, well, yeah, John, because that's just the way the business world works. It doesn't have to. My opinion is these are lazy IT people that go Microsoft because of I don't know what. There are better ways to do it, trust me. And yes, I do have a little bit of knowledge and background in that. And I'm saying that professionally speaking, not just off the cuff. There are literally other ways to do it, and I still cannot figure out why Microsoft has such a large hold in that space. And maybe somebody listening can explain that to me, 303-477-5600. You could also text us questions, 307-200-8222. Again, 307-200-8222. And I'm not trying to come down hard on Microsoft, but it's just companies have other options. And to be lumped in to what's happening today and realizing how big of a disruption that is to your business, the question is, why? Why would you stay on that path knowing there's other alternatives? Is it just being cheap? Is it laziness? Is it lack of knowledge? I don't know. I don't have the answer. John and Cheyenne, maybe you do.
Well, it was not the Microsoft Windows, it's their Microsoft
Correct.
Servers.
It's their server application. It's their server software,
right.
Yes.
And do you know how many cloud operations use Microsoft servers?
Far too many.
Most of them.
Yep, far too many.
But, yeah, it cost me my weekend vacation. I was going to fly standby today. Yeah, that went out the window.
So you're not now, huh?
So
knowing all that, John, again, you know, getting back to, I know, in my opinion, again, I say far too many because there are other ways to run servers and do things and so on outside of Microsoft. So again, I'm asking a legitimate question: why do so many still stick with Microsoft?
Because for the most part, it works. It works. The Microsoft servers work, whether it's, you know, 2000. There are still Microsoft 2012 servers in operation that are working fine.
Well, like I said a moment ago, evidently Southwest is still using 3.1.
Well, that's, yeah. But the big thing is CrowdStrike. Do you remember the history of CrowdStrike?
Yes. In fact, this is not their first rodeo, correct?
Well, they were the one that were securing Hillary's server in her house.
Correct.
You know, the one that got hacked.
And since then they've had other large news making issues as well. I'm thinking of one 2 years ago or so, if I'm not right, John.
Yeah. Why are more important than Microsoft servers? Why are you using CrowdStrike security software?
Good question.
That would be my bigger
good
question.
Good question.
But So. What was funny, I got up this morning and looked at the standby list, and yesterday I was number one on it. And there were 30 on the flight I wanted to take, and all of them were like this today. There were 30 revenue standbys. I guess a couple of flights got canceled as part of the grounding. So now it is going to take the whole weekend for the major airlines to get caught up. Because there were like 30 revenue standbys, and I think there were two open seats.
Wow. As you're saying, that's just one industry. Granted, that's a big industry, airlines, and there's several of them that were affected by that. But, I mean, that's just one industry. This affected a lot.
Oh, did you look? DIA was affected.
Right.
The ticketing system at the parking lots didn't work this morning.
Wow.
We hit the button, you get your ticket, you go in and park,
right.
It has the date and time. Yeah, it wasn't working this morning. I turned on the news when I was looking at it, and they were talking about, you know, I think it was Fox 31, but they were talking about all the issues they were having out at DIA, and they were saying, don't go to the airport until you verify your flight's leaving because it's a zoo here.
Wow, amazing.
But that was every airport, nationwide,
yep.
Because the airlines had to put a ground stop on. My wife was in... She was coming back from Dublin, and they got delayed 2 hours in Dublin because of this.
Wow.
Where they, you know, their departure.
Yeah, and thank you for saying that too, John. This isn't just a U.S. thing. This is worldwide.
No, this is worldwide.
Right.
Microsoft, from what I understand, Microsoft had everything, had it, the problem that took the servers down, cleared and back up by like 10 o'clock last night, our time. The problem was... It's now, our servers are back up, but all the users now have to bring up their system.
And if I'm not mistaken, part of the update was a shutdown of the server, meaning that there was a lot of manual things that had to happen to make this work, correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Oh, yes.
That's what I thought.
And then, so say you're on a Microsoft cloud and you're running a system
right
off of it, and it's got, you know, it's got a couple of different, sorry, it's got a database server and
right,
a comm server and an app server. Well, you got to bring all those back up online correctly. A lot of times, if you're working on a system with multiple servers, you got to bring them up in the correct order.
That's right. Absolutely. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
You've got to bring the database up first and make sure it's completely
yep
up and operational before you bring up the next one in
correct
the sequence.
Correct.
And that's on a lot of systems. What was one of the news stations I had on when I was doing some work today? In the background, said that Colorado DMV was having issues.
Oh, interesting.
Because of it. So a lot more happened, but
yep
what's funny is I immediately, and this is perfect ready radio. Oh, sorry, thunder.
we couldn't hear it. It's all good.
Yeah. I'm reading the final day, the third one
oh
in
yeah
the series.
Yeah, yeah.
And right as I'm reading this, yes, you know, I just started it, I'm like, wow, what panic just servers going down caused?
Exactly.
And I started laughing. I'm like,
yep,
I'm like, we're doomed if we ever get any.
Oh, John, I mean, again, I want to talk about this on Ready Radio on purpose just because it is a time. Okay, so good call, by the way. Glad you called in. Fits right
yeah
in. So
yeah,
given some of what's gone on today, and you're in that world, what in the future should people especially, and again, they don't have any control over the companies and the things that they do, the, you know, even the businesses that they do business with or even mm-hmm work for or what have you. What in the future, though, should people be doing on a routine basis so that if something like this were to happen and it got even larger and didn't come back on for maybe days, what should they be doing on the front side?
Be prepared. Just like we talk about every week almost, for, you know, have a couple of $100 cash around.
Because you may not be able to go to the bank.
Or the ATMs might be on that server.
Okay.
So you can't get money out of the ATM or the bank.
Okay.
The credit card companies that process, say, at King Soopers might be offline because
right
they can't process anything.
Right. Correct.
So there's so many of the rolling, you know, the, you know, as they used to call it, trickle down effect.
Correct.
Of a server system going down, such as, you know, you mentioned Amazon had some issues too. You know, a lot of companies have some issues. And what's scary is a lot more companies are not hosting their own servers.
That's
anymore
exactly right. They're all in a server farm someplace.
Well, if you just want to turn, drive west on I-80 from the I-25 interchange, you could see the huge Microsoft server farm.
There you go.
Tremendous.
Yep.
It's huge.
No, that's becoming more and more popular, John, to where companies are
right
no longer going through that cost of, you know, basically what they've gone to is instead of owning a car, they're leasing a car. That's essentially what they're doing when it comes
yeah
to servers. They're no longer managing that portion of it, the power, the backup, et cetera. They're renting space on someone else's server, correct?
Yeah, and that's the way of the future because they say it's faster, and it probably is, and, it's cheaper for the companies to not have to stand up a, you know, if you stand up a server farm, then you're hiring five
Oh, it's expensive. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Plus your power coming in has to be cleaner, and there's all sorts of things you have to do
yeah
along those lines to make sure things aren't getting corrupted, and on we go. Yeah, it's becoming more and more difficult for companies to even host. I mean, I get it. There's small companies out there that can still host a server
yeah
and so on. But, John, even that's changing. They're, you know, even in the automotive world, you know, the cloud-based software and so on is getting to the point that even guys that used to have their own server in-house and so on, that's changing as well.
Didn't you guys just have that outage a couple of weeks ago with the auto parts
yep
and
that's right
that they couldn't do anything?
That's right.
So it was that a server issue, a cloud-based server somewhere? Probably
could have been.
I mean, a lot of the bigger companies will have some on-site stand-up servers as a backup where, oh, God, we just lost the whole cloud. Mm-hmm. Well, in 12 hours, we can restand up a server to do what we need to do, a bigger company. It's like a small, it's a backup to do the bare bones of what they normally do, as opposed to, you know, the full operation.
Right.
And it's in any business right now.
Right.
But what the scariest thing is what if it goes down for an extended period? You're done.
There you go. That, you know? And ultimately, that's what I wanted to talk about today on Ready Radio is, you know, this is kind of a minor snafu. Even then, people can be stuck someplace. You just talked about the airlines and stuff that's happening there, so they're still stuck. John, what if this goes on for, you know, what if this is a major, like CDK, you were talking about the automotive thing, that literally took a week plus to get back online. What if that was an entire internet outage that went for a week plus?
You'd have, the world would come to a pretty fast screeching halt. That's why. Whenever, and this is you and I, you're traveling, get a couple of $100 in 20s,
yep,
or whatever you like to carry.
Let's stop there for just one moment, John, because I do think this is one of those things where, for those of you listening, that you have the ability to have a little bit of cash. And I'm like, John, have a couple $100, have $500. Honestly, have as much as you can. If you could somehow get $1,000, and I would say have a multiple of bills, even ones, fives, tens, 20s. 20s is probably the max. I don't think you need much more than it. Maybe one or two C notes, because they'll get you anything you ever wanted, John, in a really tough situation. No matter how bad somebody wanted to get rid of something, you hand them a Benjamin, you're probably going to get what you want. But I think even some of those smaller bills is not a bad idea to have.
But a prime point of that is, even today, what if the credit cards were down?
Right.
Or Uber wasn't.
Well, and actually there were some, you know, there were some of those down today, as you know. There were some down.
So you're at the IA and Uber won't work. You walk over to the cab stand and he says, "Well, I got to take cash," and you reach in your pocket and you got you show him.
That's
I got cash. Take me where we need to go.
That's right.
As opposed to the 20 other people. I don't understand. Maybe it's just we're old farts, John.
We're old. We're old.
How do people travel without any cash in their pocket?
John, that one I do not understand, but it is becoming more and more prevalent all the time. And I mean, I'm one where, I have cash all the time, but especially traveling, I add to it.
Absolutely. Even if you're going to put certain things, restaurants, dinner, stuff on your card.
Doesn't matter. I still have cash.
You have your backup cash for emergencies.
That's right.
Even if you don't use it all. At least you have.
Well, if you don't use it all, you come home, you have it for the next time. It's not going anywhere.
No, it's cash.
Right.
It's always going to be cash.
Absolutely. No. I think that's one thing. Yeah, one thing I was going to ask you on the IT thing, though, is would it be wise for people to, you know, they don't necessarily have to have, you know, printouts and things like that. I mean, if they did, great. But what about even screenshots of accounts and amounts and so on? Is that a good idea periodically to do?
Or back up to a hard drive that you have. Buy a $100 plug-in hard drive and back everything up to that.
Okay,
then
good idea.
Not dependent on being able to log. So your bank statement comes in. Remember, every statement that you get is an e-statement. You can go in and open it up and take a look at the paper copy. Take a PDF screenshot of that and save it in a file.
Good point.
Until the next, you know, and then just overwrite every month, Citibank statement.
Good point.
And then every month, open it, save as, copy over it so you don't overload your drive.
Yep.
But just have a separate plug-in drive that you can just plug in, you know, download stuff, but it's not on the actual computer, or you're not trying to access
Need the internet to go find it, is the point.
Right. You could look on your own computer.
Yep.
Which,
good idea.
That makes sense for everything. That's like, I knew people that started using, instead of downloading a tax, we'll say TurboTax, downloading the software to do their taxes, they started just doing it through the TurboTax website. And then at the end, you could print a copy or save a copy as a PDF, but you didn't have the software. So if something happened, you had to go back through.
Yeah, it didn't really do you any good at that point.
As opposed to buying the disc at Costco for the same price they're going to charge you online.
Right.
And then you have the disc. If you say your computer or hard drive just goes kaput. Well, at least you can reload the hard, you know, the software.
True. Good point.
New computer.
Great point.
Little things like that people don't think of anymore. We've gotten too convenient.
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
You know, a prime example, and it didn't hit this time, but what if one of the top three cell providers, just their whole network goes down?
That's a major disruption as well, and we've seen some of that. You know, where there's times where maybe, you know, one half of the country goes down. Verizon's had some issues of late. AT&T's had some issues. Yeah, that can happen too, John. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then what do you do?
Yep.
Do you have a second? Maybe buy a prepay on a different network. So, say you're a T-Mobile customer.
Yeah.
You buy a prepay on Verizon and just have it hanging around.
You know that. You know, as we talk about Ready Radio, that's really, frankly. And I hadn't thought about that. I don't own that. That's not a bad idea, frankly, John. That's actually good idea.
You could go to Walmart and buy a prepaid pay-as-you-go phone. Actually, if you have an older phone,
you could do that too.
That would work. They'll reactivate it, give you a new SIM card, and activate it as a prepay.
Good
or
point.
Or you could go on Amazon and buy an unlocked reman phone for almost nothing and then just go get a SIM card from, you know, wherever selling prepay, and just not to use, just have it as a backup.
Yep,
if
great idea.
You're on, I'm on T-Mobile. So T-Mobile goes down, well, can I get on to Verizon with the backup?
Yep, that's a great
you
idea.
You know what I mean?
Great idea.
Or, you know, if you're here's the worst thing. If you're using the same provider for your internet, phone, all that, you bundled it because it's going to save you $10.
Right.
But now, if they go down, you're
down,
kind of screwed.
Yeah.
Whereas, like in my house, I have a separate internet provider. I could always turn on Wi-Fi calling if I needed to.
Right.
A call if they go down. So you have your separate options. So, you know, locking into just one thing is never a good thing.
It's a good idea. You know, and there's one thing we haven't talked much about, and I think for a lot of people, even just a third party, you know, off of your, you know, get away from your own, and that's where you got to be careful, because some of the burner phones will have a different name, but they're still accessing your tower. So Verizon, for example, make sure it's not a subsidiary that's just running on that you know, Cricket or whatever it happens to be. Make sure that you're getting something that's off, you know, away from your provider.
So it's GSM and CDMA are the two different frequency types.
Correct.
I can't remember which is which. So if your company uses CDMA, then you want to buy a GSM or vice versa. Because those are the two different. I think Verizon is GSM, and I think all the rest are CDMA, but I might be wrong. It might be reversed. I have to look it up. But
I would too.
It's little, yeah. I don't have my computer on. I'm done for the day. I was just watching it rain.
Don't blame you.
It is raining. It's raining up here, so we are appreciating that. Because
and for those of you listening too, you there, and I just looked, you can actually go to, there's some websites that actually will tell you exactly what each provider is using, even as far as their bandwidth is concerned. In other words, is it 700 megahertz, 850 megahertz, et cetera? It'll tell you exactly which one's using what.
There's also, if you want to see which may be the best for you, there's a site called Cell Mapper.
Okay.
And when you go to it, you pick a provider, and you zoom in on your area, and it shows you their towers in your area.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But say you're, say it's cellmapper.com.
Yeah, I'm there right now. So I'm looking at it. Yeah.
So say you live like me, a little bit out in the sticks. Well, I could bring it up and say, okay, where's the T-Mobile tower? Where's the AT&T tower? Where's the Verizon towers? And which would be the best one for me to use for home cell service?
Gotcha.
So I know some people say, well, that doesn't tell me if I'm going to have good service. Well, if you've got a tower 2 miles from you on T-Mobile, you're probably going to have decent cell service at your house.
Right.
As opposed to a Verizon tower 6 miles away.
Good point.
Or whatever. The only other thing that Verizon did years ago, and I don't know if you know this, they focused on the interstates. Their towers are directional up and down most of our interstates. So if you're near or close to an interstate, Verizon's probably going to be your best service.
Okay. Good to know.
Because their focus, you know, you'll get them. Now, the other one is AT&T got that government contract for first responders.
Okay.
And in that government contract, they're putting cell towers where there have never been cell service before.
Got it.
So if you want to go that route. Now, remember, those towers are going to cycle to, I think it's called Band 14, which is designed strictly for first responder type usage. So in an emergency, you might lose your service on that tower because they just locked it to Band 14 just for the emergency responders, which I think is a good thing in a way.
Got it.
That they have better service and you're not clogging them up. But, John, sorry I took so long.
No, that's great. No, John, great advice. Exactly what I was looking for today. Perfect. Have a good weekend. Right. Sorry you couldn't leave, man.
Yep, you too. Bye.
All right, talk to you soon, John. Appreciate it. And he had said yesterday that he was going to be gone for the weekend, so I was a little surprised to see him call. Now we know why. All right, we'll be right back. Ready Radio, our website, ready-radio.com. And be sure to tune into that as well. We put a lot of great links up and things as well. But we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Ready Radio, KLZ 560. And yeah, that's a great seminar. You guys need to be at that. I actually got a chance to talk to Ian, who he's talking about being his special guest, and I had an opportunity to have him on air with me on Fix It Radio, Drive Radio last Saturday at the remote we were at up at Phoenix Weaponry, and yeah, had a good time. So yeah, if you've got an opportunity to actually go to that particular seminar, I would highly, highly encourage you to do so. It's $10. That pays for your pizza is all. It's well worth going to. So I got a message from Steve House, who you guys hear me talk to on Thursdays especially, but occasionally outside of that as well, but typically on Thursdays. And he texted me a moment ago and he said, I just heard from a reliable source that the VA, Veterans Administration, is telling veterans today that they should have a good supply of food and water. Not sure why. Do you have any vets who listen to you that may have gotten that notice? And why are they saying that? So for those of you listening that are vets, this is a question from Steve House, really trying to verify from a source that he has inside of the VA that they're telling veterans that. So I'm asking all of you as listeners, if you're a vet, you can text me. You don't even have to call in. Just text me. Is that the case? And if so, why are they saying that? Is there something coming up that, you know, we don't know about? So that's coming from Steve House, who I good friend of mine, very reliable, and he doesn't do things just off the cuff. So if he has a source saying that, he has a source saying that. So I would want to know why. So any of you that are out there listening, any of you vets that are listening, yeah, please, if you've gotten any notice along those lines, please let us know, and I'll share that with our audience. And even after the show, if you happen to hear this on a replay or something and you've got any information on that, by all means, and I can share that either tomorrow on my programs in the morning, which will be out tomorrow at Napa Auto Parts in Reunion. That's at 104th and Tower Road. I'll be out there tomorrow on site. You're welcome to stop by and say hi, and I could even mention it then. So if you're listening to this later and you actually happen to hear this and you've got some answers for us, by all means, let us know. Back to the whole CrowdStrike outage. And I'm with John. There are things that I think you need to be doing on the front side computer-wise to make sure that you're dialed in if, in fact, there's a large-scale outage, which today there has been. Now, some of you may have not even noticed it. You may have just popped up and not even known what was going on. Okay, fine. Some of you, though, it's a big deal. I'm also getting text messages in from folks talking about sort of our dual, or as John was saying, get a burner phone on somebody else's network. So I just got a text message in. The first responder network isn't great. When the AT&T building got bombed in Nashville a few years ago on Christmas, all of AT&T was down. Still a single point of failure. Yeah, I think John's point was, you know your area. Who's your most robust network? What other cell towers might be in the area you could run off of? And do some checking on that. So absolutely, yes, thank you for that. I think that's absolutely absolutely right. So, yeah, those of you that may have other suggestions along those lines, also, let me know. And I got a message from John O'Shan, who is a vet, that said he hasn't heard anything yet on that particular VA announcement. So if there's any other vets that have, please let me know, and I'll message that. So one other thing that I want to throw into this as far as the whole security things go on the Internet. And again, you need to do whatever you need to do to keep yourself prepared in the case of an outage. And I'm not going to make blanket statements because I think it's different for each group of individuals. you know, what I mean by that is you may be a family that travels more. You may be a family that travels less. You may fly. You may not. I mean, there's all sorts of things that come into play here, and you have to do whatever works best for you and your family. Maybe it's just you and your spouse. Maybe it's you and your spouse and kids. Maybe it's grandkids living with you. I mean, who knows? Whatever your situation is, you need to do what you need to do. Now, there was another article that came out today that Charlie said I should talk about on Ready Radio today because it fits in. And this is from the Huffington Post, and it's a PSA, and I get they're picking on J.D. Vance, our VP nominee right now in the Republican Party, but the PSA is don't be like J.D. Vance and leave your Venmo public. So for those of you that don't know, Venmo is an application on your phone that allows you to store money, receive money, store money, and then pay it back out. Think of it as a bank, but it's not. I don't know who Venmo's bank is. I also would highly recommend you don't keep much money there. It's just my own opinion. Non-banks keeping your money, I would not do. Now, I have not looked to see who's behind Venmo as far as the bank end of it goes. Charlie, maybe you can look that up and see. Is Venmo an actual bank or who's backing up Venmo on the actual financial end of things? Outside of my own bank, though, besides me and my cash, as John and I were just talking about a moment ago, I don't want to store much money with any kind of a third-party provider. I've done even segments on this on my daily show, Rush to Reason, talking about that very thing, and I would not allow anybody to have much of my money, and that's relative. You know, what I mean by a lot of money is, for me, I wouldn't keep more than, I don't know, $1,000 max, maybe. In other words, oh, so Venmo's owned by PayPal. So PayPal is, quote-unquote, I don't know if they consider them a banking institution, but they handle money. So they're it's probably pretty safe on that end of things. So Venmo is basically an arm of PayPal. Makes me feel a little better, by the way. I never looked at that. Still, though, even inside of PayPal, it's not my normal bank. I wouldn't keep a lot of money there. But Venmo is a company, an app, that allows you, again, to store money, to receive or pay. And it's actually fairly slick. You know, if you want to, I don't know, if you're going, I don't know. I use it more for Facebook Marketplace. I know that sounds goofy, but yes, I buy and sell some things on Facebook Marketplace. So on Marketplace, it's easy because people, instead of having cash, they can Venmo you the money. And you can receive that money. So let's say you're going to sell a $100 item and they don't have cash. Well, they can Venmo you the $100. You can see that money actually come into your account immediately, hand them the goods, and off you go. So Venmo for that works really well. Here's the key, though, and this is what this article is talking about in regards to J.D. Vance. What I just mentioned, unless you have your settings in Venmo correctly, your friends and people that know you on Venmo that you've had connections with, and even if they're in your address book, and for some of you have a very large address book, they can see your transactions. So, you know, maybe I reimburse Charlie, I don't know, $5 for lunch. I'm giving examples because I see what some people do on Venmo, and I don't know why they don't put their stuff private, but they don't. So you know, I paid Charlie $5. Well, not that I would care that anybody would see that, but that's between me and Charlie. I really don't think anybody, my other friends included, need to see that I paid Charlie $5 or $500. You know, it depends upon what's going on. I've got some coaching clients, by the way, of mine that are out of the country that pay me via Venmo because it's an easy way to do a transaction. Well, honestly, I don't need anybody, that person included, seeing what they're paying me. It's nobody's business. So this particular article is about J.D. Vance, who I guess didn't quite have all that locked down. And when you become the VP pick, but in his case, he's pretty high profile. I wouldn't have had that public in the first place. Now, some people don't know you can go in and change that. In fact, I think a lot of folks that use Venmo don't know you can change that. I would. I do. I have. When I use applications, it's one of the first things I look at, whether it be, you know, doesn't matter, whatever social media platform it is, what are your settings? What can people see? You know, can they see your friends, or do you have to give permission for that? I'm one where you're not going to see. It's none of your business. Maybe I sound paranoid, but that's just how I see it. This Venmo thing, same thing. I use Venmo, but if you know me, even if you're my friend, you're not going to see what my transactions are. And again, it's nothing against you. It's just none of your business. You don't need to see. And I'm appalled, actually, bewildered by. I'll open up my Venmo app here, for example. And what I'm bewildered about is when I go through and look, and I'm not going to name names, but you know, I can see people on here and what they have Venmo'd for and who they've paid, and I can even see the dollar amount. And I just look at that and I'm like, okay, what that I wouldn't have that public. That's nobody's business that you paid. You know, I'm just roll through some of these. Somebody paid somebody for groceries. Somebody paid something for babysitting. Somebody paid somebody for candy. Somebody paid somebody for a raffle ticket. Here's one for snacks. Somebody bought a chair. Somebody bought pizza. I mean, you get my drift here. All of these are coming up on my Venmo feed, if you would. And I can see all these different people that I know that I may not have direct contact with, but I can see the things that they're paying for. Why would you want that public? And when you click, oh, say, somebody actually bought a pony. I'm not sure what kind of pony they bought, or if that's just being funny, but it's a pony. And I get some of this is so you can be kind of fun back and forth, I guess. But again, I don't want anybody knowing my personal life and what I'm doing. I don't even care. Some of this, they've even got little emojis like, here's pizza, here's coffee. I don't need anybody to know that I paid somebody for a cup of coffee. Nobody's business. So this is an article from the Huffington Post talking about don't be like J.D. Vance and leave your Venmo public. That's what I'm talking about. What I'm explaining to you, all of these things, and I could reel off the names. I won't, of course, but I can reel off these names as to things that, here's one for Gatorade. Somebody bought a Gatorade. I mean, I know I'm weird. Charlie's laughing at me, but I'll sometimes roll through here just to be amused at the things people buy from one another or for one another on Venmo. It's almost like going back to the day of when John from Cheyenne was talking earlier about paying things in cash. It would be like having your journal of what you paid cash for and then giving that to everybody you know. Why would you do that? Now, again, I'm guessing most people, and I guess I should go through this, Charlie. So for those of you that have Venmo, I believe the way you clean this up is you click on the me. So you've got little icons across the bottom of the screen. You click on me. And then at the top is your little gear for your settings. And in that, you can click on privacy. And mine, it says private, meaning I don't even have my friends clicked. You can be public, friends, or private, meaning if I'm private, it says right here, visible to sender and recipient only. No one else sees that money changed hands. That's my setting. Now, I guess you could do whatever you want, public, friends. I would highly advise you to do this in a private manner because to me, money is private. People don't need to see who I'm buying or who I'm receiving money from. You know, who am I giving money to? Who am I receiving money from? Nobody's business. No one's business. So I would highly suggest to those of you that are listening, if you use anything like Venmo, Cash App. I mean, there's, I don't know, half a dozen of these apps out there that will allow you to transact. I would highly suggest you put those two, like what I just mentioned a moment ago, private, where no one other than you can see what you're doing on that particular application. And I would do that all across social media. Now, I know Venmo is not social media, but it kind of is. That's kind of what they're doing with the emojis and so on, where if you reimburse somebody for some pizza, it's a pizza slice that shows up. Again, no one's business. No one need, in my opinion, no one needs to know. Why that's not just private in and of itself is beyond me, but that's not how Venmo and these companies look at it. They're trying to make it a Venmo community, I guess you could say, but I look at it opposite, and that's too much information people don't need to know. So, again, you guys do whatever you feel like you need to do, but if I am a Venmo user, I was going to say if I am, but I am a Venmo user, and I don't allow anybody to see what I'm doing. It's nobody's business but mine, and I don't care if it's a $5 reimbursement. Nobody needs to know what I did. So, my suggestion, make your account private, make it that way across social media. Nobody needs to know what you're doing, and that's one more way to sort of keep things in check. I'll come back and mention a few more things along these lines. But Ready Radio, our website, ready-radio.com. This is KLZ 560. All right, Rush to Reason, or sorry, Ready Radio. Almost said the wrong show there. I did say the wrong show. My bad. Ready Radio. It's ready-radio.com is our website. And KLZ 560. And yes, this is Ready Radio. We do this every Friday from 2 to 3 o'clock. And Charlie did some investigative work for me, which I appreciate, on Venmo. It is not a bank. Yes, it's backed by PayPal, but it is not FDIC insured. And if something goes awry and you've got money there, good luck. Kind of what it says, even. Their disclaimer. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of what the disclaimer says. If something goes awry and something happens and you've got some money tucked away there, which is why I said a moment ago, I would keep very limited funds in Venmo. And I mean, depending upon, here's how I'd look at it. What can you afford to lose? $50, $100, $500. What's the magic number? I wouldn't keep any money in there that you couldn't afford to lose. If it went away tomorrow, you're still fine. Now, if you're somebody that uses it for lots of transactions and you keep a significant amount of money to you in there, I would probably change my habits on that. I would probably, not probably, I would change, and I wouldn't, personally, I wouldn't keep money anywhere where it's not secure unless you just feel it's okay to lose it. You know, it's a donation at that point. If you're fine with that, then fine. You know, keep whatever money you want to. I think there's misconceptions, and this is something I didn't talk about this a lot in my weekly program on Rush to Reason, but there was a application that about a week, I want to say a week or 10 days ago, went under. Like it'd be like a Venmo going under. And it was an application that a lot of young people used, and they felt like it was a bank. It's not. It wasn't. I'm sorry. I don't have the name in front of me. But it was like a bank. And a lot of young people felt like it was a bank. It wasn't a bank. They put money in it. And to my knowledge, the way it worked was collectively, this app aggregated all of the quote-unquote deposits. And when it went to the bank that they actually had the money in that was FDIC insured, I think it was under one account, which is a problem. Because at that point, it probably isn't insured because there's way more money than what the limit is, $250K. And there were things circulated on social media talking about how these people may get their money back, but it may take 3 months to get their money back. And for some people, they deposited their paychecks into it. They basically treated it like a bank. Bad idea, by the way. I didn't talk about this a lot on The Daily Show. I probably should have spent a little more time on it in this particular program. And the reason why I'm talking to all of you about this is it's not you that would be the problem here, because most of you listening are not going to use an app for your banking. But you may have kids or grandkids that do. So, you have to be careful on how you address this with them, because you're the old guy in the room and you don't know what you're doing and you don't understand technology and so on and so forth. Well, you may not understand technology, but you understand banking rules and what happens if something goes awry. And both Venmo and any of these other types of apps I was just talking about a moment ago, you would be highly, highly advised to tell your friends and family that's not a good idea. I'm one where, I guess because I'm so old school, I want a brick and mortar bank. In fact, I want to be able to walk in the front door if need be. Here's my money, or I want money. Either or. In fact, I guess because I've been self-employed so long, I don't even bank with the big banks. That's just me. And nothing against them. But no, I don't bank at a Chase or a Citibank or a whatever. No, I find local banks that I can work with where when I walk in, the teller knows my name and takes care of me and whatever it is. And yes, I still bank that way. And I would not bank any other way. As much as there sometimes is a downside to a smaller bank, and some of you listening may know what I mean by that, I won't bank at the big conglomerates for various reasons. And I just feel like having that relationship, like anything else that's out there, means something. Does it mean that I'm going to get my money any faster than somebody else? Not necessarily, but when you've got a relationship with a bank, it's a lot different than just being a number. So my advice also, especially those of you that are self-employed, is make sure you're banking with somebody that you can walk in and talk to and have a relationship with and not just be a number. Going back again, just as a reminder, if you've got friends or family that use applications to do their banking with, number one, I wouldn't. Number two, if they are, make sure that individually their account is backed up by the FDIC. You'll be able to, legally, you can look and see, like we just checked with Venmo, is it? And it's not. So for Venmo, folks, just think, by the way, Charlie, all of the millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars that Venmo gets to keep at any given time. And by the way, they'll tell you right there they don't pay interest. So just think about what they get out of the money they're holding for people and the interest they're able to make on that, even if they've got it in a low interest bearing fund somewhere that money is being transferred back and forth through. Just the float alone on it would be huge. That's how companies like a Venmo are making lots of money. Again, the flip side, though, is your money that you have there is not protected. So for you guys listening, friends, family, grandkids, etc., you know, whatever your relationship is, I would highly suggest that you have a little family meeting and say, okay, how are you guys handling your money? And remember and double check, these particular applications that you're using may or may not be FDIC insured and most likely aren't. And if they are, how? Is it collective or is it on an individual account basis? And I would be looking at some of those things to make sure that that's, you know, dialed in. Again, Ready Radio, we try to prepare you for all of the what ifs of life, not just end of the world stuff, but just day-to-day things that involve you and your life and your family. And if there's things, by the way, topics you'd like me to discuss down the road, I'll do the research and talk about them. Just send me an email, ready-radio.com, and I'll handle it that way. So guys, that's it for today. Have a great rest of your day or evening or afternoon or whenever you're listening to this program, and I appreciate it very much. Ready-radio.com is our website.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.